This is BPN Radio, your 24-hour internet prayer station, calling America to pray. It's time now for the Christian War Room with your host, Michael Schonborn. Now, here's Michael.
Thank you, Dale, and thank you for this kind introduction. We are in the War Room, and welcome to the War Room. And we are looking at trend analysis. That's something for you to do in your war room, and it's something to get right into it, to understand what is going on in the world and what do we need to do to present the gospel in a way people can relate to. It's very, very important. Very important stuff. So, in our last talk, we were looking at the decades. My little plan was do 100 years in half an hour. Didn't work. I managed to do about 30 years. So we were looking at the 20s, the 30s, and the 40s. Today we're gonna be looking at sort of the modern age, and maybe some of you who are listening, you can relate a lot better to the decades which are coming now. I know that a lot of people who lived through the early part of the 19th century, they're dead now. But a lot of people are still around who can vividly remember the 50s as, you know, the age or the decade they were shaped. Okay, so what was happening in the 1950s? And again, it's important to sort of get your head around it. So if you meet a person, I mean, how old are they today? Maybe in the 70s, 80s, and they lived through the 50s quite intensively, and they were going through all this time, It's interesting when you listen to these people and what makes them tick. Okay, so in the 50s, yeah, we had the 20s and 30s, and they were quite prosperous decades. You know, things were going really, really well, and then bam, you know, the war came and everything was destroyed. And when you look at Europe was in a mess. You know, a lot of people suffered a lot of stuff. People starved to death. People had really hard times. A lot of hard feelings between people of different nations. And these hard feelings, they lasted, I would say, right into the 80s. And then for some strange reason, they just stopped and people didn't care anymore. And it was probably a different generation coming up. So anyway, we've got the 50s, and the 50s was one of consumerism. So there was, they called it the Wirtschaftswunder in Germany. So that is the economic miracle where suddenly everything was coming back up again. You know, houses were being built, people had... you know, better cars, or they could afford cars. Radios, a transistor was invented in 1947, and so that one slowly came on the scene. And towards the latter end of the 50s, you had a lot of consumer electronics, which was a lot smaller and much more affordable as well. There was a huge amount of progress. Employment rates were very high, so unemployment was virtually zero. Everybody who wanted to work could work. And everything was sort of moving up. But the main thing which I think the people of the 50s remember is food. And now food was very scarce for about 10 years before that. And now food, food stamps stopped being issued, and people could eat as much as they wanted. And the diet changed as well. I heard that people started eating a lot of fatty foods like mayonnaise and... butter was very important. And it's quite interesting as well, because I didn't like butter or margarine that much. So if I would rather eat a sandwich without butter and margarine, just dry bread and a bit of sausage on it and stuff like that. And the generation before me, my grandparents, they couldn't understand this. They thought I was crazy. Yeah, for them, it was really, really important because they didn't have butter before and they didn't have any fatty foods as such. And they were... in a state of being hungry all the time. My mother as well, when she grew up in these days, and she told me that she felt hungry all the time. Not all the time, but often. So it was something which was quite normal. So in the 50s, you got consumerism, and everybody was just eating, you know, eating what they wanted to eat. That was a big thing. Okay, here are a couple of things. I was once talking to a guy in a factory. So I worked in some steelworks, so I'm going back to the 80s now. And so again, the guy, when he was a kid, he was probably in his 50s at the time. So when he was a kid, he would have just grown up after the war. So he was just sort of in this era of the 50s. And we started talking, and when he found out that I was a Christian, he suddenly told me that never ever in his life has he thrown away any food. And okay, so I had to digest this a little bit. Never ever in his life, I heard, oh, okay, you're a Christian, and then he told me proudly that never ever in his life has he thrown away any food. Okay. So I had to let it sink down. I didn't say anything. I didn't know what to say, but it kind of stuck with me. And later on, it sort of dawned on me, and I thought, is this biblical? Yeah? That you know, you shouldn't throw away any food, but you should eat it all. You should have respect for your food. And I couldn't find anything in the Bible. Yeah. So, I mean, pretty much, you know, if your food is rotten, you throw it away. You don't eat it. Yeah? You don't, you know, cause your body any harm. Maybe you manage your food a little bit better or something. Is it bad to throw food away? And I couldn't find anything in the Bible. I mean, you correct me if there is something. But in his mind, that was a very important thing. Yeah. One day you're going to stand before God. In his mind, he's going to be judged on how he was dealing with food. And I sort of try to get my head around, and it's years ago, you know, for years, I had to think, not years now, every night and whatever, but every now and then I had to think about this man, and I don't know whether he's still alive. It's a long time ago, so he would be in his 80s or 90s now, if he's still alive. But it kind of stuck with me. I mean, he was a really kind fellow, you know, he was good and so on. And I didn't know sort of how to sort of interpret this, but then it dawned on me that because of the scarcity of food they had in the 40s, and maybe in the early 50s as well, that they were really struggling to feed one another. Food has been elevated to something of very special status. It's holy. And I mean, I grew up and there was plenty of food. I mean, never had any problem with a scarcity of food. If you wanted something, you ate it. You didn't have to think about how much it costs, or you didn't have to think about where to get it from. You just ate it. Yeah. And for me, it was very often the opposite. My parents wanted to make sure I'm well fed, and I didn't want to eat as much as they want me to. And I was struggling eating all the stuff they put on my plate. And so very often I was resentful of food rather than desirable of food. Yeah. I wanted sweets and not, you know, whatever vegetables they put on my plate. Again, you know, that is something that has shaped a certain generation. And when you sort of confront people like that with the gospel, which I tried to do like a long time ago, but I didn't really have anything to say to that. I couldn't tell this man, you're talking a lot of rubbish. Yeah? God is not going to judge you on how much food you have not thrown away or thrown away. Yeah, that's not the thing, but he's going to judge you. Where do you stand with Jesus Christ? That's what I should have said. I didn't say it because I was a young man. I was a young Christian. I didn't know. Yeah, I didn't know how to deal with this. But again, it's important. It's important to sort of try and understand different generations. And when you have your war room, it's a little bit about collecting intelligence, yeah, collecting information. And one of the bits is in whatever cultural context you are, you need to understand what is on the people's heart, you know, what is concerning them. I'll give you another sort of story, and this is in South Dakota, and I was talking to a couple of Indian guys, and one thing I noticed when I was there is you had the white European society there, which happened to be mostly Germans. You know, they all had either Scandinavian or German surnames. A lot of them had. And it was interesting as well, because when you looked at the faces of the people and living in Germany and living in England and going through Europe, you can sometimes tell by sort of the facial features, whether, you know, somebody's British or somebody is German, or whether somebody's from the north or to the south. And there are sort of little features sometimes you can recognize. And when I was going to that place, what it looked like to me, it was just like a bunch of Germans with cowboy hats. Yeah. And to me, it looked like really, really bizarre. And obviously, they were all Americans, but the heritage was from there. And a lot of people in the place where I was, they started emigrating to the place just when there were big waves from Germany, you know, Germans coming over and trying their luck in America, and they would settle them in the Wild West, in Indian country. Then you had the Indians. Where I was, the reservation wasn't far off, and in the town itself, there were a lot of Indians, and there were a lot of people who were sort of half European, half Indian as well. And it was quite interesting, sort of, when you started talking to people, what would sort of rock their boat? And also when you sort of started talking to Indians, and you started just listening to see what they had to say. And they had serious problems in their community. A lot of it was related to alcoholism. A lot of it was historical as well. They felt that they had been cheated out of, you know, what they think or believe is rightfully theirs, like their land and other things as well. They believe that that they are trod upon, yeah, and other things as well. And a lot of it is got an historical base somewhere. And again, it's important to listen. So if you want to reach out to these people and you want to approach them with the gospel, you need to reach out to them, not just in a way where you try and impose your values or your message onto them, but where you feel with them the pain their nation has suffered or these people have suffered, where you try to share in the joys and in the achievements as well, in the great things of their culture. And surely there are great things in every culture. There are achievements in every culture, and there's pain in every culture as well. And it's very, very important to sort of be able to connect with them so that they can connect with you and you can share with them the most important message in this world, which is that there is a God, and that there is a God who knows you and who loves you and who wants to reach out to you. Okay. Let's have a look. I'm going off on a tangent, and we're okay for time. Right, so we've got this 50s, consumerism, food explosion, rock and roll, very big change in society. It's the advent of the TV set as well, yeah, in the 50s, and it starts proliferating the homes. Only one channel, couple of hours of television every night. And then the 60s come. And again, the 60s, I don't remember them very well, even though I was around then. And what you find in the 60s is the economic miracle is carrying on. We get stability in life in the West. And I was sort of talking to people on the Soviet bloc as well. And the 60s were actually quite good years for them as well. You know, everybody at work, people started living, you know, had their own flats, and family life was reasonably stable, and sort of the Stalinist madness had stopped, and things started. Apologies for that. Things started to look up for them as well in the Soviet Union. So the average person living there, they had a reasonably comfortable life. You know, if you stay away from any political trouble and so on, you were kind of okay-ish. What they did a lot in the East is they all had their little dachas, you know, the little garden somewhere, and they would start growing their own fruit. And there was the 10 square meters of paradise somewhere on the edge of town. And a little bit like that was going on in the West as well. And I sort of, looking back and what people were saying, it was actually quite good days. Yeah. The 60s were actually quite good days. People were very, were getting used to a prosperous lifestyle. You know, you worked hard, you made some money, and you could live reasonably comfortable. Yeah. And you had lots of little gadgets, nice cars. The cars which were manufactured in the 60s were quite amazing, actually. And I don't know why we've ever moved away from, you know, the designs which were there. And, you know, people had holidays, and they started doing stuff they never used to do before, you know. So it was quite a good time. And then the other thing which came was science. Science became, you know, we had the man on the moon in 69, and then science became the new God. That was a bit of a problem, yeah. And from a Christian perspective, that is something we had to deal with, where we had the scientific God. You know, they had the answers for everything. You know, my grandmother was telling me that that she believed that one day all you needed to do is just eat a pill, and you know, you had all your nutrition's for the day. You had them, so you didn't need to eat anything else and so on. And that was sort of the mentality they had. Okay, I got a book, it's interesting as well, which was written in the 1960s, and it said 1980 is tomorrow. And I was reading through it, and I still want to give it one more go, especially it would be more interesting with the benefit of hindsight now, what these people were believing in those days. And that was written in the 60s, and they made sort of a prognosis of what 1918 looks like. And sort of looking at what they were saying, they were very optimistic, extremely optimistic in these days. But then we had the 70s, we had the oil crisis, a couple of other crises, and then some of the progress got stunted and not much was happening. And so pretty much what they projected for 1980, you saw in 2000 and 2000 and later, you know, some of the technological developments and so on. Anyway, we then had the 1916 as well. We had the sexual revolution. Sort of movements going away. When you look at the philosophy which was there, there was a lot of atheistic philosophy, secularism being piped out, and there were deliberate attempts to destroy faith, and there was a lot of it. And this pretty much went hand in hand with this belief in science. Science had all the answers, and they came to the conclusion that there is no God, therefore there cannot be a God. And that all started sort of in the 1960s, where there was the beginning of apostasy from a Christian perspective, where people started abandoning the faith they've held for near enough 500 years. And they were just giving up on it and embracing something new, something unknown. And that was pure atheism. And again, from a Christian point of view, we need to understand this, because that's the point where we need to fight. So if we get people from the 60s, they've still got this mentality: if I cannot see it, I don't believe it. And therefore, if there's no, if I cannot see God, there can't be any God. Again, you can confound these arguments within seconds by just referring to electricity. Nobody has seen electricity, but we see the effect of electricity. And it's the same with God as well. Nobody has seen God. I mean, maybe some people have, you know, near-death experiences and all that, but nobody, you know, even if you haven't seen God, you see the effect of what God has created, and you come to a point in your reasoning where there is nothing else there other than God, unless you, you know, deceive yourself and you believe that 600,000 gene codes can arrange themselves by pure chance, and then a flash of lightning comes and welds them all together, and we've got our first single cell organism. I mean, that's just a fairy tale, but people sometimes choose to believe a fairy tale rather than to be confronted with the truth, or the ultimate truth. Okay, let's have a quick check on the time. We've got about 10 minutes left. So we've got the 70s then, and the 70s was an age of progress, and it was probably the last age of, you know, feeling comfortable and feeling that everything is okay. And I remember this was sort of in 1975, and I was sitting there with my father, and he always watched some political shows, and some analysts said that this is probably the best decade which we have. So we've got the highest level of happiness and satisfaction and prosperity, and we will not have anything like this again. So from now on, it's going to go downhill. And true enough, you know, it pretty much happened. Shortly after that, the oil crisis kicked in, where OPEC tried to control the price of oil, and things started going downhill, you know, very, very fast. And also the scientific progress seemed to be stunted sometime sort of the mid-70s. There was still progress being made, but, you know, beating the diseases like malaria, like cancer and lots of other stuff, it just didn't happen anymore. You know, they made huge amount of progress from the 40s to the 70s in medicine, in technology, in electronics, in mechanics, and mechatronics. But then suddenly it just stopped, and it was all stunted. And then we had to revisit the whole thing. But it later, it obviously picked back up again, as we know, with the benefit of hindsight. So the 70s as well, what seemed to be much more foundational was the unshakable belief in science. Christians at that point were considered to be, people who cannot be improved upon, little fanatics, no-hopers, who will run through the wall or bang the head against the wall against the facts, the so-called facts that were presented. We had the theory of evolution, which was firmly engraved into school education now in the 70s. We had ideas of science being the solution for everything. They had ideas of, having colonies on Mars and Venus and things like that. They later took them to understand that it wasn't quite as easy as what they thought it would be. We had the start of the UFO phenomenon as well in the 70s, where, it was there before, but it was sort of a little bit, oh, this is all crazy and stuff. And then suddenly more and more people started seeing strange things in the sky, and it sort of started becoming more mainstream, yeah, the whole UFO phenomenon. We had feminism becoming quite strong in the 70s. There's a sexual liberation as well. The pill was introduced in the late 60s and became quite normal in the 70s. Birth rates started going down as well in the West. And there were a lot of alternative lifestyles as well, sort of picking up in the 70s. So you saw a lot of different cultural expressions in music and you got these things when you look to the music, which before, like in the 50s and 60s, was always positive and about something, and suddenly became darker and darker. When you look to the lyrics within the music, it sort of moved into the occult, into the violent stream, and into something that's not very nice. But they were pushing this music on people, and you started hearing it in the radio. And when I was in Germany, we heard a lot of English language music. Most people didn't understand what was being sung. Today, when I, obviously I speak English, I listen to the stuff which was played then, and some of the stuff was really, really dark. Also, when you look at films on television, there was more and more violence and sort of action movies and things like that. When you look at films from the 50s and 60s, they were always positive. There was always a reflection of life, a little bit of comedy, and then there was always a little bit of a moral. There was always an uplifting film trying to, get people think good about their community where they were in. And suddenly it seemed to be very gory, a lot of violence, a lot of immorality. And that all started in the 70s. But also there were positive things as well. There was the Jesus People movement, and I, I'm not a product of the Jesus People movement, but part of my Christian upbringing was done by people who come out of this movement. There was also great revivals towards the late 70s and mid 70s and 80s as well. And again, myself, I'm a product of one of those revivals which went through the country, and a lot of people came to faith in Christ in those days. Okay, let's have a look in the... we've got about 24 minutes. 24 minutes. We need to come to an end. So we've done the 70s. Again, you need to understand in your war rooms what was going on in different decades. You need to analyze the trends and come to a conclusion of how can I deal with people who have got this particular background. So if you get a child of the 70s, and today they're going to be in their 50s and 60s, this is what they've been shaped with, So they've got a very anarchic, stuff the government, let us do our own thing sort of attitude, whereas a generation before, people were very loyal to the government. The government says this, and that's the reason why we need to do this. And there's a very, very different spirit. One is very obedient, the other one is very rebellious. Again, you need to understand what makes people tick. And then based on, this understanding, you can sometimes present the gospel in a format that's, a lot more accessible to them. So, for example, if somebody is very obedient, you can focus on the obedience. This is the way God has planned. If somebody's rebellious, you can say, you need to get out of this world. This world is trying to screw you. the best way to rebel against this world is to seek the face of God and to do it God's way, and not, you know, what the authorities in this world tell you to do it their way, the globalists and so on. So a 70s person would be very open for that. A person from the 60s and 50s, you know, who are now in their 70s and 80s, they would, who grew up in this era, they would much more respond to, you know, this is the way you need to do. You need to apply the way of God in your life. Okay, we are coming to an end of this session. I think we can cover the rest in one more session. This is a trend analysis going back 100 years and sort of trying to think and to apply a method of reaching out to people, you know, different backgrounds, different, you know, different cultures, and also different cultures from different decades, and to reach out to them in a relevant fashion. It's very, very, very important. We're going to, next talk, we're going to look at the decades. We're going to be looking at the 80s, the 90s, and the noughties, and the 2010s. And again, very different set of people. And when I look at some of the upcoming generations, it really horrifies me, you know, where we had to my generation, you know, anything goes, you can talk about anything, freedom above everything. Nobody can shut you up. Yeah. If you want to talk about something, you talk about it and it's okay. You just have to make sure you make an argument, you make a point. And nowadays we've got a generation where the so-called snowflake generation, where if your talk is deemed to be offensive, it's really, really bad. And these people need to have safe spaces where they can go and cry and, you know, sort out their soul again, because they need to be in a protected environment and they need to be spoken to in a very protective manner so that nothing can upset them. And we need to have these people who do the censorship for them, or self-censorship, so that you don't get somebody who says something which is antagonistic to their worldview. Because if it is antagonistic, then it's wrong and it's hate speech, because it's not very nice, because their worldview, you know, complies to the consensus. It's got to be nice. It's politically correct. If somebody comes along who isn't, it's a very, very big problem. And that is what we are dealing with today. Yeah. And we're going to look at this tomorrow. Okay, Lord, I just want to praise you and thank you for war rooms. I pray, Lord, for war rooms to be rising up throughout this world, and that communities will be impacted with a great commission in Mark 16 to preach the gospel to all creation until you come back. Lord, I pray, give wisdom to my brothers and sisters. Give them understanding and give them discernment to understand the generation they are living in, and to be able to reach out to a people that have been fooled, that have been fooled by the enemy, that have been indoctrinated with lies, people who don't know, can't tell the right from the left anymore, who can't tell light from darkness. Lord, I pray that you will give wisdom to my brothers and sisters, to myself as well, Lord, and that we can walk in the wisdom of God, and that we can proclaim your gospel in your wisdom. Lord, being cunning as snakes, but yet without flaw and without fault as doves. I pray, Lord, for this in Jesus' name. Help us, Lord. Amen.
For the past half hour, you've been listening to the Christian War Room with host Michael Sean Bourne. For more information on how you can participate or find out more about the Christian War Room, simply go to ChristianWarRoom.com. That's ChristianWarRoom.com.